Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Thursday, February the 5th, 2026. 10 minutes past the hour, you're tuned into WGH Talk Radio. So glad to have you with us. And this hour, we're going to tackle something that we have wanted to tackle for quite some time firsthand. Of course, the big news this week on Tuesday was former 2nd Ward City Councilman Ayers Ratliff not guilty on all charges. And this morning, we are so glad to welcome to the studio Ayers Ratliff and his attorney and relative Rocky Ratliff. Thank you both for being here this morning. Glad you could come in. First live interview.
Good morning, Scott. Yeah, I've
live-ish.
Live-ish, yes.
Well, glad to have you here today. And I think what we all want to know: how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it's you feel good. There's no, you know, and it's. You know, I've known for 2 years that I wasn't guilty, and now everybody else knows it too.
What's it like to have to be silent for 2 years because of legal wranglings?
Well, if you know me well, you know it's hard. you know, I'm not the silent type. I'm the type kind of a bull in the china shop kind of guy on that I was on city council, and you know, it is hard for me not to just go in and bust through the door and just lay your cards on the table.
Mm. When the verdict was read and the moments leading up, well, just take me through it. The moments leading up to it and when the verdict was read.
Even just now, it's hard not to get emotional talking and thinking about it. But waiting for the jury to deliberate is tough. But the time that they tell you they have reached a verdict to the time that they read it is probably 10 minutes, and that is the time that is the most grueling time that anybody could ever spend. That 10 minutes feels like an eternity.
When it was read, what runs through your mind when you hear not guilty?
You know, the thing is... is that, you know, I've always been told, you know, if the jurors look you in the eye when they walk back in the room. And so, you know, I really looked, you know, I was like, you know, and so you know, I really only looked at jurors 1, 2, and 3 because they locked eyes with me the entire time from the moment that the door opened. And then I really didn't look at the other ones because I was just focused on them. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a good sign. This is a good sign. And they sat down and I looked above them, and juror number 5 locked eyes with me and smiled. And I just kind of looked up and I said, thank you, God, because this is going to be okay.
It had to be an incredibly emotional moment, and we certainly can understand the emotion in your voice here this morning. This goes back nearly 2 years now.
May of 24.
I believe May 20th was the date. May 20th,
yes.
2024.
Yes.
What happened May 20th, 2024?
So on May 20th of 2024, I went to work just as I always do. And as I was leaving work, I started getting phone calls. And I worked at that point in Grove City, and with the traffic, it was, you know, usually about an hour and 20-minute drive home. And, you know, my, you know, stepson and my cousin and my sister-in-law and, you know, people were calling me saying, what's going on? Is everybody okay? Like, you've got cops at your house. You've got, you know, you've got yellow tape around your house. What, you know, and I had no idea. I couldn't get a hold of my wife. I couldn't get a hold of Rocky. I couldn't get a hold of JC. And I ended up calling Chief McDonald and asked him what was going on and asked him if everything was okay. And he assured me everything was fine and that everybody was safe and everybody, and you know, we just need you to come in. We just need you to come in. And, you know, I really, at that point, you know, not everything is fine. And so I really, when I got back into town, I really, I mean, I thought somebody was in trouble. Never crossed my mind that it was me. And, you know, busted through City Hall that I'm going to come in and protect somebody. And they pulled me in and instantly detained me at that point.
What followed? When did you realize something, aside from that, had happened? When did you become aware of what had happened?
Well, they sat me down and explained what the allegations were. And from that point, transported me to the hospital to do a sane exam myself. And at that point, transported me to jail.
And what is this like, in a matter of moments, to have this all going on?
I mean, your head is just spinning at that point, to where you don't know, you have no idea what's going on. And it's just, I mean, it's hitting you so hard and so fast that you don't even have time to think about or react at that point.
Mm. What is the worst moment in this part of it? What was the worst?
I think through it all, the actual time that, like, that you felt like your knees was gonna buckle is, you know, they had told me that I was accused of sexual assault, went through my sane exam, went out to the jail, and when you go there, you have to sign paperwork. And it's the first time that I saw the word rape. And, you know, I guess, even being the naive person that I am, I don't know that I equated sexual assault to rape. I just feel like, you know, sexual assault is, you know, less than, I don't know. And seeing that word and signing that paper was any one particular second that was the absolute toughest was when I saw that word.
When you find out where the accusation comes from, what's your reaction?
Scared and concerned.
You're a sitting councilman at the time. Columbus News covers it. Local paper covers it. Everybody's talking about it. You see your mugshot on television. What's that like?
I mean, the amount of embarrassment that you feel is just absolutely, you can't put it into words. You just can't. And unless you've experienced this, I could sit here for 10 days and tell you how it feels. You couldn't understand it.
Was there ever a point where you thought, I'm not going back to council?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, that was my intention. I said, you know, I was going to resign, and I talked to my dad and I talked to my uncle JC, and they both were, you know, you are absolutely not. You have done nothing wrong. You are going to walk in there with your head held high. And that was another extremely tough moment. You know, I brought a couple friends with me, and I actually sat in the parking lot and cried before that I even went in. And, you know, I was mortified, I was embarrassed, and I was scared, because I had been getting death threats. And, you know, I was honestly scared. And for that first meeting, there was a ton of people there, and I spent most of the meeting just looking through the crowd, who's going to stand up with a gun, or who's, and that was what I thought about the entire first meeting that I went back, which was, I never missed a meeting through this. Like I walked in there every single time, and it definitely got easier. And I am thankful and grateful that nobody said a word about it. Not one single person ever said a word. Not one person from the community called for my resignation. Not one person on council ever threw it up in my face. And the only thing that I ever got from other council members was before and after the meeting, when they would say, we don't believe this. Like, there's no way that we think that you did this. There's no way. And, you know, that I only got support before and after the meetings. They weren't strong enough to say it during the meeting. And, you know, honestly, Jason Schauber and Mary Stoneburner were the only ones, I think, unless I'm messing one out, like, you know, strong enough to, like, wear the Ayers is Innocent shirt. But, you know, I...
What do you make of that, I guess we call it camaraderie, that nobody did ever call for your resignation? They said those things to you after meetings. Jason, Mary wore the shirts. Nobody ever did that. In the entire year and a half that you were on council, that this was hanging over your head, it was never talked about.
You know, I mean, and I think it goes to the fact that they didn't believe it. I mean, I think if they would have believed it, they would have had a real problem with it. And I, you know, you go to all the meetings, and, you know, I was pretty silent for the first several months through all this, and, you know, just kind of refeeling my way through life. But I think as time went on and I got more comfortable again, I mean, I felt like I was the leader on council, even with all this hanging over my head. I still feel that a lot of them look to me for leadership in a lot of different ways.
The first night you came back, I think it was Channel 10 was there. The camera was focused right in on you. The Dispatch was there. A writer from the Dispatch was there that night. The local media was there. And it fell silent when you came in the room because nobody knew if you were coming or not. What is it like to walk into that? See the camera? Know it's for you?
I mean, it was, you know, and not, it wasn't really silent. There was a whisper. You could hear whispers. There he is. There he is. There he is. There he is. You know, that's all that I heard the whole walk up front. And, you know, that was tough.
What person sticks out to you? Who came up to you during that time, which I'm guessing is not a great time, and said the most comforting thing or reassuring thing?
There's no doubt at that point that Jason Schauber and Trina Rose were the most supportive people up there. You know, Trina being the clerk and Jason on council. And I was thankful that Jason was a third ward and sat, right next to me. And even after that very first meeting, he just was like, scoot out of here, you know, just, you know, scoot out, man. Just and, you know, and offered to walk out with me. And, you know, and so, I mean, those two by far were the most supportive and comforting to me.
I want to talk about the day these accusations are made. You're arrested. Now, is my understanding, this is not normal procedure for something like this. Do you consider it normal procedure for something like this?
It doesn't even make sense. It's so abnormal, it doesn't even make sense. You know, how that somebody can make an accusation and you are detained and arrested before they enter your home, before they have, I believe it was before they even have search warrants to go into your home, before your alleged victim even has a SANE exam, you are in jail. It's so abnormal, none of it even close to make sense.
So in the last 2 years, what happened? Why do you think that happened?
I think that you had a prosecutor that not only didn't like me, didn't like my family, and is a political opportunist. I think he found this was a way that he could get attaboys, as he was not only the prosecutor, he was the president of the Marion County Republican Club at the time. I think he got local attaboys, and he was trying for a higher position. and he was applying for a federal prosecutor job, and he was using this as, look at me, I'm all over the news, I'm taking people down, I'm who that you need. And you know, and so I mean, I think he used it, as a double stepping stone for him, that one, he was getting attaboys in his party locally, and two, he was getting noticed on a bigger level.
Why did he dislike you?
I think, well, one, he disliked me from the standpoint, and my family, just from the standpoint that my cousin ran against him at one point. It was a long, drawn out, not nice campaign, and a lot of the people that he runs with didn't like me. Mayor Collins and his administration at that point did not like me. The majority of city council, when you're the only Democrat sitting up there, you are the target. As far as on city government, there's no doubt that the Republican Party would say I was the target. They didn't have anybody left. And Judge Ballinger, and even powerful people at the hospital and, the police chief, none of those people liked me. And I think he was getting encouragement. He was getting attaboys. He was getting, good job, Ray. And he feeds off of that. He has an ego that likes to eat. Mm.
The day after, when he sent the video to media, his thoughts on what had happened and what he was going to do. When you saw the video and the traction it was getting, it got played in the Columbus media, what did you make of the video so soon after you being, the allegations came down?
To be honest, at the position I was in at the time when I saw the video, it really scared me. One, I knew that I didn't do it. Two, I knew there wasn't any electronic evidence. And three, I knew there wasn't any physical evidence. But at the point that he said he had it, I was scared of manufacturing. And, I, in no way, shape, or form do I believe that Ray Grogan or Jay McDonald or any of them is not above manufacturing things. And so that's what I was extremely concerned of until we got the discovery from them and was relieved that they didn't manufacture anything, because they didn't have anything.
So you believe that these people would manufacture evidence?
100%.
Now, for people listening, this is their police chief, this is their prosecutor. Why do you feel that way?
Because I know them.
How would you describe them as people?
Bad.
Well, yeah, come in here, Rocky, on this one.
You have to remember, at the time that we're receiving private investigators and other forensics on a defensive side, we are sending letters to the prosecutor's office to say, hey, present all the evidence to the grand jury. And if you don't want to, we'll come down as attorneys and present it ourselves. Now, we sent that at least two different times with all this forensic evidence. They didn't present none of it. So, I mean, you're withholding evidence from the grand jury because you want the grand jury to do what you want the grand jury to do. You're not presenting the whole case to them. You're not presenting facts that will be beneficial to the defendant. You're presenting your side, and I think it took them about four or five grand juries to actually do what they wanted,
And I've heard Ray say that twice on the news now, that Ayers Ratliff that two different grand juries indicted him. He doesn't tell you that he took it five times. He doesn't tell you, when he tells you he respects the people on the grand jury, he didn't respect the people that told him no, because then he waited for a new grand jury and he brought it back. And it's an unethical thing called grand jury shopping. And when you get a group of people who tells you no, you just wait for the new ones to sat and you try to strong arm them into it.
What do you make of Grogan's reaction to the verdict? Because he's been out in some places.
Oh, I think he tells you exactly who that he is. I think when he says, I would do this again, I think he would. He got rid of me, and that was the main goal. And maybe he can't step up now. Maybe this tarnishes him that, you know, people sees that he is, you know, he's a malicious and, you know, unethical prosecutor. He's probably good here in Marion because there's nobody to run against him, and the Democratic Party is extinct. So as bad as he is, as terrible as he is, and how much danger that he presents, he's probably locked into the Marion County prosecutor as long as he wants. But the fact of the matter is, when he tells you he would do it again, knowing he had no evidence, knowing the results, knowing that 12 out of 12 people told him he didn't have a case, he would do it again, that means he gained something. That means he won. And what did he win? He ruined me to where I could never be in local politics again.
And what does that say about him, in your opinion?
I mean, it says he's a horrible person. And
because people think he's a nice guy. You know, he'll shake your hand. He'll say, you know, nice things, how you doing, so on. Most people, I think, who've met him personally say, nice guy.
He is a fake, phony, unethical, terrible person that ruins people's lives, and he does it, and he smiles about it. You know, when we were in court the one day, and, you know, they just whisper at the other side's table nonstop, and they're not even good at that, because you can hear most of the things that they say. And when Rocky was up and he was making an argument about the fact that they never even tried to get me removed from the home, and there was an independent court investigation that recommended that I return back home, Weaver looks over at Ray and says, "We should do that now. We should file something now." And Ray smiles, and they laughed. And that's the kind of people that they are. They are bad people that have some power and just soak it up.
Do you think he should resign?
You know, I mean, I'll go one further. I don't think he should have a license.
That far?
Yes.
That far.
Well, you got to remember, too, yeah. Scott. I know you weren't in the trial, but they were using, I'll call it, a sane examiner, a nurse, who had done the test wrong. And when I say do the test wrong, she misapplied what's called TB dye. She wiped it off wrong, and it went into the vaginal cavity, which it's not supposed to be in this mucous membrane. They were using that picture on a test that was done inaccurately, improperly, and putting it on, blowing it up for the jury and putting it into evidence that this man had done something wrong, trying to get him convicted, knowing the picture and the test is incorrect. And they're asking questions like, look at all that damage to the vaginal area. So if you're willing to use a picture and evidence that's really incorrect, and you can say doctored or you can say whatever you want, but knowing that that's done wrong, you're willing to go above and beyond and use that picture to try to convict anyone. I mean, you're not ethical, period. So, I mean, that's why he shouldn't have a license. I would agree with that. I mean, you can't do stuff like that to people.
You know, when the accusation comes down, I think a lot of people say accusations are made, okay? Accusations are made, and the prosecutor has to deal with those in some way. But when he realized, apparently there was no DNA and nothing there, just ego is why he continued on with this?
You know, he planted his feet, and he was never man enough or ethical enough to say, I was wrong. And in Marion County, it's like the Keystone Cops here. They aren't very good, and they have this approach, ready, fire, aim. And usually, when there is smoke, there's fire. Usually, when there's a terrible accusation, there's something there. So you can just run in 100 miles an hour, and you're going to uncover something eventually. Something is probably there. Something you're going to uncover. Except in a rare occasion, you know, 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 500. And that's what happened here. And that's why you can't have an amateur approach to this stuff, because you ruin people's lives for no reason. And at, you know, at some point when an accusation is made that's not true, an adult has to be in the room somewhere. There has to be an adult somewhere that says, wow, none of this lines up. Wow, none of, you know, there is no DNA. Wow, a sane doctor says everything's good. Wow, there's only a 4-minute window that this could have happened for the entire day. Wow, this really didn't happen. But he's not big enough, he's not man enough, he's not good enough or ethical enough to ever say, you know what, we messed up here.
Thoughts on the police chief, Jay McDonald?
Well, you know, it started off at a preliminary hearing where Mr. McDonald said BCI is in charge of this investigation. We asked for help. We asked him to take it over. Two witnesses later, the BCI person, Mr. Officer Hammond, who basically took evidence out of the house, said, we're here assisting. This is not even our investigation. So when you have a police chief, you don't know if it's BCI's investigation or the Marion City Police Department's investigation, you have a problem. I mean, I think it's, if you look at all the investigations that's gone on, it's 25 pages, period.
And he's running again for president of the FOP?
As far as the FOP, I don't know anything about that, whether it should be that or not, but he should not be our police chief. We have a problem, I think, in the fact that, the contract state, we're just going to hire from within. So you could have someone like an FBI director wanting to retire here, has tons more experience than anybody in our department, but we have to take the person in the department. I mean, unfortunately for the citizens of Marion, he was the guy. So as quick as we can either eradicate that contract that says we have to hire from within, or that clause, or whatever we can do, we're going to be better off as a community, because there's people that has to have more experience than him. I mean, the fact that people like him would use tax dollars to go down to the border to try to see what they can see or do, him and Mr. Grogan, I mean, it just shows what kind of people they are. They're more about press and attaboys and being noticed on some stage than they are about taking care of the community of Marion, and that is the problem.
Aaron, you had something to say about Chief McDonald?
I was just going to say, as far as him being chief, as a former city council person, it is a tragedy what happens to the budget because he's chief. He is the most expensive chief you could ever have because of his FOP position, which is extremely political. And you can look at, you know, his children both have political jobs. Like, he's totally locked in politically and uses it for his own personal and family gains. However, you know, he gets, what, 5 weeks vacation a year, plus another 50 FOP days that we pay him to run all over the country, and then we pay somebody else to be the acting chief while he's running all over the country, not working for us, working for the FOP. And so you not only have to take what his six-figure salary is, now you're paying that salary to somebody else to be the acting chief, and you're paying two chiefs at the same time to get, you know, subpar what one good chief could do.
You mentioned the mayor. He had just come into office, Mayor Collins, not too long before this had happened. You had a few contretemps with him at council. Your relationship with him?
You know, here's what I think. I think in the very beginning, yes, I came because there were some unethical dealings with contracts with his administration. I fronted those out, and we definitely had a contentious beginning. And I honestly believe by the end of that term, I don't think he believed any of this, and I think he liked me. I think he respected what I said. I had multiple people say that he said one of his worst mistakes was that he had a contentious relationship with me early and did not listen to me early.
Mm. So that relationship, and he's a former police chief, former deputy sheriff, that was able to be kind of smoothed over.
I feel I could sit down and have dinner with Chief Collins tonight. I keep calling him,
Former chief.
It's an old habit for me.
So he's obviously big in the Republican Party, as Jay McDonald and Ray Grogan were. So do you think his relationship is okay with those people?
I don't know. You know, if you're talking to the guy that doesn't know what goes on in the local Republican Party, you're looking at him here.
Not many do, as that would go down the line. For 2 years, you've dealt with this. What has the 2 years been like?
You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know because this isn't something that you live with. This is something that you live. And so now that the court case is over, I said to my wife the other day, I said, you know, I don't even know what to do. Like, I don't know what to do now. This is all we've thought about. This is all we've talked about. This is all we've done. This is all that we've worked on. You know, because I've said on day one of getting charged with something like this, there's a no contact order. You can't be around some of your loved ones. You can't be around your house. You get fired from your job. You lose your health insurance. So you don't have any money. And now you have all these bills and all these experts and, you know, private investigators. And so the bills just flood in and the income's not there. And so, you know, and you still have all your personal responsibilities of things you have to pay and do. And it is overwhelming. And, you know, and I look at the rest of my life from this point on and it's overwhelming again because I still sit here today and I don't know what to do.
Well, something you said earlier, you got death threats.
Yes.
I mean, what were people saying? Are these just local people who...
You know, I don't know. You would turn on your, you know, Facebook and you would have a bunch of instant messages from people you had no idea who that they were. I didn't investigate it. And, you know, and you would just, you know, it would be, you would open it up and it would be a meme of like a knife falling, another person like, you know, somebody losing their head in a guillotine and, you know, and you know, or, you know, you're a sick, you know, blank, blank, blank. And so, you know, you get to, after the first couple of days of those, you just don't even look.
Obviously, we don't identify the accuser here, but how do you coalesce that? And how is that relationship?
You know, I can't answer the question without divulging more information than I'm allowed. So I'm, you know, our relationship is going to be fine.
Mm. Does forgiveness come?
Yes. And it's already there. I mean, and you know, she's finding it much tougher to forgive herself than it was for me to forgive her.
When your family obviously has been involved, and we know that your wife is still set to stand trial here in a couple weeks. I think that's the case. So we can't go into this deeply, but to have your wife brought into it, what's that like?
Again, it shows who he is. It shows what his motives are. It shows what his intentions are. And it just shows who he is. And I just hope and pray that people come to the realization of what an absolute piece of shit that he is.
Well, there you go. Plain spoken. Rocky, you're representing Heidi, and I know you can't get too deep into this case, but should this happen? Should this trial happen at this point?
No. She's being charged. You see this in a lot of drug cases, Scott, in this community, where if the person... is challenging the evidence, what they'll do is they'll go after the loved one, the wife, the girlfriend, whoever was in the house. So you see it all the time from this police administration, the cops and Mr. Grogan. They've done that here. They did it a week after she sued him because she lost her business. So it's all in retaliation for Mr. Ratliff, Ayers Ratliff, not taking a plea deal. This is all this is. She's probably, her name... So when you get discovery in this case, in her case, Scott, it's all Ayers' discovery. Talks about DNA. It talks about experts. It doesn't talk about anything that she's done. Her name might be five or six times, maybe a dozen times in the reports, and it talks about how cooperative she's being with the investigation. So, I mean, this is definitely a hit job. It always was to try to get this man, Ayers Ratliff, to plead to something. That's all it is.
Well, what was the plea that was offered? Can we say that?
No.
We can't say that? Okay.
It shouldn't have ever came out, but again, it shows his unethical tendencies and behaviors to take at least counsel-only material or confidential material and disclose it to media. I've never seen a prosecutor do that, ever. They don't try to embarrass defendants that beat him at trial, but this one has. I mean, this is who he is. This is what we have.
And honestly, I wish that I could, because I would love to talk about all of them that were made, but we can't. And the fact of the matter is, it was made clear from the beginning, this is either being dropped or we're seeing it through until the end. There was never, ever any plea I was going to take.
So it was never an option for you. Can we say when the first plea came? Did it come early?
No, I don't want to.
Don't want to get into it?
Yeah, I don't want to get into it.
That's fine.
Scott.
Okay. Obviously, your reputation was hurt here. Can you, even with the verdict, can you ever get it back? You say you can never run for political office again. Can you ever maintain a normal, in quotes, life again?
You know, you'll have to ask me in 15 years. I don't know. I'm going to try.
How are you feeling this week? You think better? That there's a better chance of this happening?
Well, obviously, I feel better.
Than
I did on Monday.
Yeah.
But, you know, until my wife is cleared, there's nothing to celebrate. There's nothing. There's no reason to, you know, feel happy at this point, because now he's got a gun to my wife's head.
Well, and how does that feel?
Terrible.
What do you say? Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. The world we live in now, when an accusation is made, people can Google somebody's name and you're going to get articles that relate to that. So, you know, how do you ever get past it, I guess, is the question for anybody who's been accused of something.
You know, because of what my position was in the harness racing world too, and because I was a longtime track announcer for the third largest track in the world, as far as harness track, you know, this story ran all over Australia, which had a huge following for the track that I was at and stuff. And so, you know, so for the Marion Star or the Scott Spears show to, you know, come out and say, you know, that's good. That's great for Marion. What does it do for the, you know, tens of thousands of other people that may not even hear that it was, you know, over? Because although there has been some media coverage, the media doesn't run with the cameras and say, oh, look at this now. It never happened.
Well, and that's it. And that's it. Unfortunately, for everybody, that's it. That being said, do you think you can ever work in the harness racing world again? Do you hope to work in that field again?
I hope to.
Hope to. Any bright spots there?
We'll see.
Have you learned anything from this two-year period?
What I say that I have learned the most about just the way things work and the way that things operate is that we have the best judicial system in the world. But boy, is it fragile. And it is extremely fragile. And it only works as designed if you have the right people in the right places to make it work the way that it's supposed to. And when you have an unethical, immoral prosecutor behind the wheel driving your judicial system, it is not going to work the way that it's supposed to.
The term, I believe, that was brought out earlier, early in this situation, political retribution, that this was done for political retribution. At the time, if you were able to define that, what would that have been?
You know, here's really what I'm going to say about it. That was a large part, other than the fact that we can prove that it didn't happen, That was our defense that we put to the jury for two weeks, that this was a political hit job. And 12 out of 12 people agreed with us.
You were on the stand. What's that like?
It is much harder and much more emotional to be up there than I ever thought that it would be. But to have lived with what I've lived with for 2 years, and to be accused of what I've been accused of, and for the prosecutor to have put out the press releases and the videos and said the things that he said, when I offered myself under oath, unfettered, that he could ask me anything that he wanted, and he didn't even have a single question, it makes you so angry and so frustrated that he has done this to you, and he doesn't even have a single question.
I think Colleen Marshall said on this show yesterday that his response to that was strategy. That was his strategy.
He lost. His strategy sucked. So I don't know what strategy that he's talking about, because he lost.
When you hear him say something like that, do you have any explanation for it?
He doesn't have an explanation for it. So he just has to make something up. But so, you know, he's a bad person and he's a bad attorney. I don't know what else, you know.
You know, here's the thing. When people in Marion are listening to this and their elected prosecutor, you're saying the things about that you are, which you're entitled to say. The police chief, you're saying about the things about him you're entitled to say. Manufacturing evidence. What hope does somebody in Marion have that something like this wouldn't or couldn't happen to them?
The hope you have in Marion is to vote trash out of office. And that's the only way things are ever going to get better here.
Well, we don't vote for police chief.
You can vote for other people who can change the system to get a better system for the police. And what's scary about the police chief, as bad as I think that he is and as unethical as I think that he is, the people coming in behind him who's going to be the next chief is just as bad. And so I do believe we have some good young officers here, but I'm telling you, the high up in our police department is scary.
Hmm. What scares you the most?
At this point, I don't know. There's such a smorgasbord that what scares me the most at this point is what he may try to, you know, what I'll say strategy he's got for my wife at this point.
So there's fear there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The civil case, headed there when this is all done?
As fast and far as I can.
Now, people are confused about this to a certain degree, money. I saw this conversation going on the other day. What would be acceptable for you?
So that is a misconception as far as the way that the lawsuit reads. We filed this locally. And so they're the ones who wanted it transferred to the federal court. And I think they thought they would get a better shake in federal court, because unless I won my jury trial, there wouldn't be a suit. I mean, that would have been just dead on its face. And so, you know, once they lost the trial, I think that they really thought, you know, strategy-wise, get it out of Marion, because I think most of Marion at this point, if you read social media, know I've been completely screwed over. And so when you file a suit, there's two classifications of suits, under $25,000 and over $25,000. So if you read the suit, it says in excess of $25,000. And then I think people take that and they're like, he only sued for $25,000? It is in excess of $25,000 and far in excess. What that number is, you know, that'll be determined later. Mm-hmm.
People seem to feel that the county might come and say, let's settle. Is there a...
I hope.
No? Yeah. Better than going to trial, I guess, at this point. When you look at the legalities and things that have went on, that this went on for 2 years, what does that say to you?
There again, it's incompetence and disingenuousness of the prosecutor's office. You know, he stood in January of 25 when he dismissed the case and said, we have the evidence to convict him now, but we're going to dismiss it, and we might bring it back. And then they wait till I sue them, then they bring it back. And I waited 6 months to sue him. I mean, I thought I had a good window of time. He had 6 months to bring it back, and within just a few short weeks of me suing them, of me and my wife suing him, he re-indicted me and indicted my wife. That really tells you all that you need to know.
Well, I think, Ann Scott, you have to remember, when we went to trial, they presented on their case in chief six total witnesses. They had four prosecuting attorneys sitting at that table. I've never seen it. Including Detective Dean, there's five people sitting at that table. And then they bring in, at closing arguments, 15 to 20 officers. I mean, they wanted this dude bad. That's all. I mean, that it shows. They usually send kids to be interviewed with a forensic interviewer down in Columbus. They didn't. So we had an unqualified interview happening. We had, hey, substantiate the case with no investigation, Children's Services. We had files being kept at the prosecutor's office. Was all this stuff's unheard of. You know, most kids get seen at Children's for their sane examination. We go over here to Marion General. I mean, it's just, it stinks all the way around. It really does.
Well, what did you make of that, the officers showing up at the trial?
It just, there's so many things that it just, again, shows you who they are. And they just reveal themselves over and over and over again.
A couple things I want to get in our few remaining minutes here, and I hope you can come back, because there's a lot to talk about here, and we're just kind of trying to glaze over the big stuff here. But do you have any regrets in this whole matter?
I mean, at this point, I would say that I regret ever running for office the very first time. But once that I was in office, I don't regret taking any stand that I took. And if you really analyze the stands that I've taken throughout the past 20 years, Marion would be better off if they would have listened to me on most of them.
For people, you know, a lot of support, but for people who hear the verdict and still say, he's guilty, he got off, blah, 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 what do you say to those people?
I don't even know who you are, and you don't know who I am. So, you know,
Well, I also understand it's Chief McDonald going around town saying that even though it's possibly whichever way it goes, you know, he's going to be guilty. So, you know, when your chief of law enforcement goes around, we're actually talking about a justice system that he's not buying into. It's part of the reason that he needs removed. If you can go around saying, well, if someone's not guilty, who cares? They're still guilty. I mean, that's not who we need as leadership in this community. That's pathetic, and it's gross.
Well, I think we heard during testimony, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Tom Robbins apparently said to Jason Schaber, when Councilman Schaber was asking questions about this, we got him, something to that effect. Now, this is the safety director for the city at the time.
That would be the police chief's boss at the time. And, you know, Jason on day one was extremely concerned. You know, the day that all this shook down and the day that I was arrested, his granddaughter was in my home and, you know, was in my home a lot because my wife ran a daycare out of my house or out of our house. And, you know, so he went up to him out of concern and he crossed both his, you know, fingers on both hands and said, Jason, we got him. We got him. And, you know, that's what went on here. And, you know, for the position that I was in, with my wife running a daycare and me trying to help out the schools and, you know, being a substitute teacher for the three years leading up to this, being around thousands of kids, they caused concern and panic in people's minds needlessly and selfishly. And, I mean, people of Marion should be so mad at them that, you know, if I had substituted for your kid, or if my wife had watched your kid and she had ran a daycare in our house for over a decade, the fear that they made in those people's minds is unforgivable.
the high and the low during this?
I'm going to say, you know, the low is actually what I'm going to say is going into the jail and, you know, seeing that word and thing. The high is going to be in Toledo. The high we haven't seen yet.
Finish the sentence. Ayers Ratliff is
innocent.
Philosophy. Do you have a philosophy? Have you developed a philosophy from this?
You know, I mean, it's one I've lived by my whole life, and I know, and I've said it, you know, even, you know, through, you know, a lot of this. Good people do bad things, and bad people do them more often.
Want to get this one question in, because Jason Schaber sat next to you all those weeks on council while this was going on. I know you and he are friends. He testified during the trial. Thoughts on him?
I love Jason. You know, I mean, I really do. And his friendship and support, I don't think I could have got through the last 2 years on council without it.
Ayers, I can't thank you enough for coming in today. Our time has run out, and I know people want to hear more. I do hope you come back, and hopefully we can do that. Rocky, thank you for facilitating this morning. I certainly do appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Scott. I appreciate the people that showed up and supported. I also appreciate the 14 people, I guess, that sat there and listened and, you know, really listened and took it in. Very attentive jury.
So. What are your parting words on this whole case, this part of it that's ended?
Well, I mean, I think justice prevailed. We needed 14 citizens that actually took the time to understand what's going on. The system doesn't work without them. And again, the support that he received during the trial, people taking off 2 weeks of work to come in, I mean, it's staggering.
But, you know, people I don't even really know were there from start to finish. And, you know, and people that I wasn't really friends with before any of this started. And, you know, your circle changes.
Ayers Ratliff, thank you for coming in today. Rocky, thank you for coming in. And I appreciate it. And hopefully we can do some more down the road. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
The world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Yes. Doesn't it just?